Hello and welcome to the Manor School Podcast, returning for our third series. We've had our Christmas break and a dry January for podcast releases too, but we're thrilled to be back to bring you all the wonderful content that the children in the Our Voice Podcast Club want to share with you, the listeners. So let's meet those podcasters. Here are the children that you'll be hearing from for this term.
Hi, my name is Karen.
Hi, my name is Hugo.
Hi, my name is Sienna.
Hi, my name is Layla.
Hi, my name is Fiore.
Hi, my name is Erin.
And we're in year three.
Hello, I'm Harry.
Hello, I'm George.
Hello, I'm Harley.
And we're in year four.
Hi, I'm Ruby and I'm in year five.
Hi, I'm Obba.
Hi, I'm Lachlan.
Hi, I'm James.
And we're in year six.
Great to have a few returning members and some new voices too. Something else new for this term is a feature we're calling Off Script. The children work very hard to prepare what they want to talk about, but we thought it would be good to give the children the opportunity to speak more conversationally about some topics. So we've gone very topical this week and had a chat about the current strike action in the UK. Recently in year six, we've been talking about current affairs and it sparked some interesting conversations. So we thought in this part of the podcast, we would talk about one of those topics and just have a bit more of an off-script conversation about a particular issue that's quite topical at the moment. So we thought this week we would talk about the strikes. Very pertinent for today. Today is a day where there's lots of strikes across the country on the 1st of February. So I'm here with Obba and James and Lachlan from Year 6. So boys, what are your thoughts on the strikes?
So in my personal opinion, this is probably a controversial opinion, but it's a free country. I feel like for the education sector and the firemen people and the nurses and the doctors, not selfish, but it's just kind of, there were a lot of lives on the line, well, not necessarily for the education sector, but they're like, their minds you need to teach, it's going to affect like everyone. And while yes, it is unfair that the pay, I do just feel like there are better ways to do it.
Okay.
Because like striking, it like there are lives on the line, people could die, and it's just, is your pay really as important as someone who could possibly die?
Yeah, okay. Fair enough opinion, Obba. I think, yeah, you're talking about the impact that those sectors have and the responsibility they have, whether it's worth it. So yeah, an interesting take. How about the rest of you? What do you think?
I think that we should all be able to do what we want to do. So we're allowed to strike, and I think we should be allowed to strike. I just don't think the way that we are striking is going very well because it's not really changing that much at the moment. So okay. Maybe we need to think more about how we strike.
Okay. Have you got an idea on what could be more effective?
Maybe don't take weeks off or big amount of times off, especially for the people who are important, because maybe if they're actually doing lots of help to the people, maybe the government will think more about paying them more.
Okay. How about you, Lachlan? Anything more to add?
Well, I think everyone has the right to strike, but they could do it at different times, so not in winter when everyone's getting colds and things. So maybe they could do it in spring, for instance, where less people are vulnerable.
Okay, yeah, really interesting point.
Everyone has a right to strike.
Has a right to strike. So why do you think they have that right? What are your thoughts on the reasons that they are striking?
Like, it's fair. I get that they don't have enough pay, and, like, it's a really bad problem. These guys are, like, if footballers are being paid more than people who actually save lives. People who just kick balls around are being paid more than people who save lives and had to go to school for 12 extra years just to do their job. And so it's really unfair, and I do see why they would want to strike. But I think maybe striking isn't the best way. Now, there's also protesting, which is like the same, but different, because you don't do it like instead of doing your work. You do it on like your free days. And I feel like that's it might not be as an effective method, but you'd have the day off anyway, so why not spend that day trying to get more pay for the days you do work?
Okay, yeah, fair point.
People strike because I think they strike because of the cost of living and everyone's bills are going up and they're struggling a bit more. They're allowed to do it, but maybe nurses and everyone who does things like that, they should all get the same pay increase. They should all get the same as footballers and maybe bring the footballers' pay down to make it even for everyone, no matter what you do.
Yeah, I think that'd be very difficult to do, unfortunately. But yeah, it's a really fair point that the imbalance of pay is a massive issue, especially when we're talking about, as you mentioned, the likes of footballers' wages are, you know, so vast in comparison. But you mentioned the cost of living crisis. Everybody is impacted by the cost of living crisis. So why are we only seeing certain sectors strike and not everybody?
Well, I think it's because some people have better jobs with better pay. So if they do something good, their pay rise increases.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if someone does good, everyone's pay rise should increase if they do something good. But nurses, I don't think that happens, especially if they like save two lives in one go. I don't think they get as big pay rise.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point in terms of the impact they're having. Perhaps their pay doesn't reflect that, and I think that's one of the major issues, particularly in those type of sectors where you feel that these jobs are highly important and highly valued, but don't actually receive the correct kind of remuneration for it in return, in terms of the rate of pay, the salaries that they're getting. So it is tricky. But where would the money come from? You know, you're suggesting perhaps just raising everyone's salaries to in line with the cost of living. But that money's got to come from somewhere. So what do you think? Where would we get that source of income from?
Maybe we could have... I think we can make new jobs that pay better, but then you don't need to have a particular skill for it.
Yeah, so people can just get money, so they can also help the people who don't have any money.
Okay.
I feel like we need to even it out. I feel like that should be like us. Okay, this is probably a wild solution, and
we like wild solutions.
Either a less wild solution. And a solution I'm surprised we haven't taken yet, cut down footballers or other sports players' like pay. Or, and this might be kind of controversial again, but I'm still going to say it. I feel maybe there should be like, if you're earning this much income a year, you should have to pay a little bit extra on your taxes, and those taxes will be added so that people who don't earn that much money mm-hmm. can have that added to their pay.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point, Oliver, and that's essentially how our economy, our system works in this country, is that people who earn more pay more tax, but perhaps those who earn significantly more should perhaps still be paying even more tax. But that's a whole another debate, but I think that is an interesting solution. I think we'll probably wrap things up there, unless anybody's got anything more to add before we sign off.
No,
I think I'm quite happy.
Super. Yeah, really good, guys. I'm really interested to hear your opinions on this. It's something that not necessarily all 11-year-olds are as well informed on as you guys. So I think it's been a really worthwhile thing to bring to the listeners, and hope they've enjoyed your input.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Great to delve into their opinions there, and we'll certainly be delving further on a range of other topics in future off-script features. Next, we welcome one of Manor Lodge's keen librarians, Ruby, to tell us about some of the new titles available for the children to find in the school library.
Hi, I am Ruby, and I'm going to tell you the five newest books in the library, starting with The Good Turn by Shirna Jackson. This book is a sharp and funny book. A perfect book if you like the London Eye mystery. Number 2. The Treehouse Joke Book is packed full of funny jokes that will make you laugh your socks off. This book is great if you like the Story Treehouse collection. Thirdly, The Miraculous Sweetmakers. This book is a great fast-paced book, full of adventure. If you like fantasy books, this is a perfect book for you. Number 4, When Fishes Flew. This book is an unforgettable journey to a Greek island. This book goes back in time to World War II. Finally, Sombiella by Joseph Kohola. This book is a funny and a slightly scary book. The book is based on Cinderella, but has a slight twist to it. The book is perfect if you like fairy tales. Hope you enjoyed my part of the podcast.
Thank you, Ruby. Now we have Layla and Sienna from Year 3 to tell us about Manolodge's school council.
Hi, my name is Layla.
And my name is Sienna.
And today we are going to tell you about the school council.
We're both in the school council and we love it.
At the moment, we are going to buy more equipment.
Sadly, lots of people take each other's equipment. So that's why we need more equipment and we need everyone's help looking after the equipment.
Also, we want different school dinners and we want to get different school dinners because lots of the people would like to see some new dishes on the menu.
We also want our school to be more eco-friendly. We hope to work together with the eco team to do this. If you would like to join the school council, this is how you can get into it. Children next year, 2 and above, can vote for someone in their classes. Number 1, your teacher will say, next week we're voting for our school council next year.
2, you need to make a poster that says why you want to be in the school council. 3, be very confident and say your sentences on your poster and don't be scared.
Number 4, your teacher will ask you to vote for someone. Number 5, your teacher will count your votes and Madam Law will read them out in assembly.
So that's what you need to do if you wanted to join the school council.
Also, if you want to be in the eco team next year and the school council, you have to choose one at a time.
Thank you for listening.
We hope you enjoy our part of the podcast.
Excellent. Thanks, girls. Now, much like our previous podcasters, this group also enjoy researching every top 5 and top 10 you could imagine. So to start us off this week, here's Erin in Year 3, who's found out about some of the worst viruses known to man.
Hello, I'm Erin, and today I'm going to talk about the top 5 worst viruses. Number 5, Escherichia coli, abbreviated as E. coli, is bacteria in the environment, foods, and intestines of people and animals. If you wonder what it is, it is a bacteria in your stomach that is mostly harmless, but if it gets infected, it can be very dangerous. Number 4, Clostridium botulinum was first described in 1897 by E. van Erminghem. Foodborne botulinum is rare but can kill rapidly and is very dangerous. Number 3. Salmonella is a type of food poisoning which was discovered by an American scientist named Dr. Salmon. Most people infected with salmonella develop diarrhea, fever and abdominal cramps between 12 and 72 hours after infection. Number 2. Vibrio cholera is the bacteria responsible for the well-known disease cholera. Cholera is said to be fatal. Number 1. Tetanus. According to CDC, is an infection caused by a bacteria called Clostridium tetani. This bacteria lives in soil and manure. I hope you never catch these viruses but enjoyed my part of the podcast. Bye!
Ugh, they sound nasty, but great pronunciations, Erin. Very impressive. Next up, Fiore in Year 3 has researched the most renowned hotels in the world.
Hi, my name is Fiore. Today I'm going to tell you the top 5 best hotels. Number 1. Mardin Palace, Turkey. Situated on the shores of the Turkish Riviera, Titanic Mardin Palace is one of the most luxurious, all-inclusive resorts in the Mediterranean. Number 2. Burj Al Arab, Dubai. Situated on its own island, Burj Al Arab Jumeirah features suites overlooking the sea, 8 signature restaurants, and a full-service spa. Number 3, Atlantis Paradise Bahamas. Atlantis Paradise Island Resorts and Entertainment and Adventure. SeaWorld activities and amenities. This Bahamas vacation destination has to offer. Number 4, Emirates Palace Abu Dhabi. Located on the shores of the Arabian Gulf, overlooking its own private natural bay. Number 5, The Plaza New York City. Since its debut on October 1st, 1907, the Plaza Hotel has remained a New York icon, hosting world's leaders, dignitaries, captains of industry, Broadway legends, and many more. Thank you for listening to my part of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it.
Next, we have an interactive game for you. Here's Oba, Hugo, Lachlan and James with the Wheel of Questions.
Hello, podcast listeners. Today, we are trying a new thing. Right in front of us, where you can't see, we have a screen with a wheel on it. We're going to spin the wheel and there are going to be some questions on it. And we want you guys to answer those questions along with us. So let's go. Let's spin the wheel. The world is going to end. What do you do in your last 48 hours?
I would say I'd probably try and see all my family, and that to me would be making the most of the last 48 hours.
Well, in my eyes, I'd probably try to figure out a way for the world not to end. But if it does have to end, I guess I'd eat a meal, me and my family would all snuggle up and enjoy the time and just, yeah.
I would probably meet my family like everyone else and do all the things that I've always wanted to do.
I would probably meet my family and have a really nice meal like it's Christmas Day.
Pause now so you can have a go yourselves.
Okay, next question.
This is an interesting one. You can ban one food, what is it?
I'd probably say peanuts, because everyone these days seems allergic to them, and I think it would just make the world a safer place.
I was going to say Brussels sprouts, I just don't like them.
I would probably say nuts, because lots of people are allergic to them.
I would say cauliflower, because I hate it.
Okay, next question.
Oh wait, you guys need to answer too. If you could change one thing about the world, what would it be?
I would probably make it so there are a lot less break-ins. I'd make sure people have much higher high-tech security than they do now to reduce break-ins.
I'd probably just eliminate death. That's a thing I would probably do if I had the power.
I would probably just like make it so you can see people and put living crisis down so people can pay for their living crisis.
I would make it so there weren't rich and poor people and everyone was just equal.
Interesting. All right, next question. Invent a superhero. All right, Lachlan, you go.
I would invent a superhero with kindness, but also a way to help people if they're feeling down and to help them with their bills.
All right, let me go next. Personally, if I had a superhero, I would probably make a superhero that could generate like anything at any time. So you could like generate like a portal to like another dimension, or you could generate like a hot dog. I don't know. And he could also fly, because then it would make it so much cooler. All right, James, next.
I would do a robot that could just
invent like clean energy so we weren't making climate change so bad and it could just sort climate change out.
You guys are acting like you're on an interview. Alright.
I would make a superhero that could create energy bills, like it would make energy bills less expensive and it would just be really kind.
I love how everyone just chose like one to help out the rest of society and I just chose one that I just thought would be kind of cool. Alright, so what are you guys' answers?
Pause now so you can decide.
Alright, final question. One final spin. Create a new animal. This time just make it something cool and nice so that I don't look bad. Locke can go first.
I would probably create a legal. It's a mix between a lion and an eagle. So something that's very fierce but can also fly high and can swoop. And can like swoosh down at his prey really quickly.
I'd probably just take a dog and make it talk. That's what I'd do. And I'd call it the
talker dog. I would probably make an animal that was just kind of lazy and it just sat around speaking. Because I think it would be kind of cool just having an animal like that's lazy.
So like a sloth?
Yeah.
I would probably invent a pet that you could ride around on and you could also teach it how to play a lot of games.
So kind of like a horse?
Yeah.
Cool.
But a bit more clever.
All right. Yeah. Thank you guys for listening. We hope you guys had as much fun as we did.
Absolutely no doubt. Great idea, guys. Well done. Lots of fun. Now we move on to Karen in Year 3, who has found out about some expensive jewellery.
Hello, my name is Karen, and today I'm going to talk about the 5 most expensive pieces of jewellery. Number 1, the pink star costing up to $71.2 million. The pink star shattered every price record when it was sold at Sotheby's for an astonishing $71.2 million. At 59.60 carats, the fancy vivid pink internally flawless diamond is the world's most expensive diamond or jewel sold at auction. By a long shot, this beautiful pink jewel, about the size of a strawberry, is prized for its size, clarity and intensity of colour. Number 2. The Oppenheimer Blue, costing up to $57.5 million. The world's largest fancy vivid blue diamond to hit the auction block. The 14.62-carat diamond might sound relatively small compared to the 60-carat pink star. But vivid blue diamonds are even more rare than pink, so to find one, the size of its quality is miraculous. Number 3. The Memory of Autumn Leaves and the Dream of Autumn Leaves, costing up to $57.4 million. The most expensive earring sold at auction, this set of fancy coloured pear-shaped diamonds are similar in size and shape. One is 14.54-carat fancy vivid blue diamond and the other is 16-carat fancy intense pink. It's a collector's dream to get 2 exceptional coloured diamonds in one sale. Number 4. The Winston Pink Legacy, costing up to $50.7 million. When the Harry Winston Company paid over $50 million for this diamond, far exceeding the $30 million estimate, is a set a record price per carat for a pink diamond of auction, originally found in South Africa and cut into 1920. The stone belonged to the Oppenheimer family, who controlled De Beers. It's how famously named for its new owner. Number 5. The Blue Moon of Josephine, costing up to $48.4 million. Hong Kong billionaire Joseph Liu paid a jaw-dropping sum for a 12.3-carat internally flawless fancy vivid blue diamond as a gift for his 7-year-old daughter Josephine. This came a day after he purchased a 16.8-carat pink diamond for $28.5 million at rival auction house Christie's, which he named Sweet Josephine.
After his daughter too. Very nice. Thank you very much, Karen. Moving on to sport next, we've got Harry, Harley and George from Year 4 to tell us all about the greatest ever footballers.
I'm Harry.
Hello, I'm George.
Hello, I'm Harley. And today we are talking about the top 10 greatest footballers of all time.
Number 1, Lionel Messi. Leo Messi is an Argentine professional footballer. He plays as a forward for Ligue 1 club Paris Saint-Germain and captains the Argentina national team. Widely regarded as one of the greatest players of all time, Messi has won a record of 7 Ballon d'Or awards, a record of 6 European Golden Boots, and in 2020 was named to the Ballon d'Or Z Dream Team. Until leaving the club in 2021, he had spent his entire professional career with Barcelona, where he has won a club record of 35 trophies, including 10 La Liga titles and 7 Copa del Rey.
2. Pelé. Pelé was a Brazilian professional footballer who played as a forward regarded as one of the greatest players of all time and the greatest by FIFA. He was the most successful and popular sports figure of the 20th century.
Number 3. Alfredo Di Stefano. Alfredo Di Stefano, 4th of July 1926 to 7th of July 2014, was an Argentine-born professional footballer and coach who played as a forward. Regarded as one of the greatest footballers of all time, he is best known for his achievements with Real Madrid, where he was instrumental in the club's domination of the European Cup and La Liga during the 1950s and 1960s.
Number 4. Cristiano Ronaldo. Cristiano Ronaldo, born 5th of February 1985, is a Portuguese professional footballer who plays as a forward for Saudi Professional League club Al Nassr and captains the Portugal national team. Widely regarded as one of the greatest players of all time, Ronaldo has won 5 Ballon d'Or awards and 4 European Golden Boots, the most by a European player.
Johan Cruyff. Johan Cruyff was a Dutch professional footballer and manager. As a player, he won the Ballon d'Or 3 times in 1971, 1973 and 1974, who created the Cruyff turn.
George Best. George Best, 22nd of May 1946 to the 20th of November 2005, was a Northern Irish professional footballer who played as a winger, spending most of his club career at Manchester United. A highly skillful dribbler, Best is regarded as one of the greatest players in the history of the sport. He was named European Footballer of the Year in 1968 and came the 5th in FIFA Player of the Century vote.
Number 7. Diego Maradona. Diego Armando Maradona was an Argentine professional football player and manager, widely regarded as one of the greatest players in the history of sport. He was one of the 2 joint winners of the FIFA Player of the 20th Century Award. Maradona's vision, passing ball control and dribbling skills were combined with his small stature, which gave him a low centre of gravity, allowing him to move better than most other players.
Number 8. Zinedine Zidane is a French professional football manager and former player who played as an attacking midfielder. He most recently coached Spanish club Real Madrid and is one of the most successful coaches in the world.
9. Franz Beckenbauer, born 11th of September 1945, is a German former professional footballer and manager. In his playing career, he was nicknamed Der Kaiser, the Emperor, because of his elegant style and his leadership on the field. And also his first name, Franz, is one of the Austrian emperors. He is widely regarded to be one of the greatest players in the history of the sport.
Number 10, Ronaldinho, born 21st of March 1980, commonly known as Ronaldinho Gaucho or simply Ronaldinho, is a Brazilian retired professional footballer. He played mostly as an attacking midfielder, but was also deployed as a winger. Widely regarded as one of the greatest players of all time, Ronaldinho won 2 FIFA World of the Player Year awards and a Ballon d'Or.
Thank you for listening to our bit of the podcast.
Thank you, boys, but I can't believe you forgot Harry Kane. Come on. Anyway, we now move on to our teacher interview for this episode. We welcome back Ruby from Year 5 to put the questions to our school librarian, Miss Drackham.
Hello, podcast. This is Ruby speaking, and I'm interviewing Miss Drackham. Miss Drackham, what are your favourite sweets?
Oh, what a good question. I think probably my favourite sweets are chocolate. Most chocolate goes down very, very well.
Thank you. Number two. What always brightens your day?
At Manor Lodge, I think that having a library full of children and seeing everybody enjoying the space and a love of reading is the best part of my day.
Okay. Number three, where did you grow up?
I've always lived in Hertfordshire, and I grew up in Bishop Stortford. That's where I went to school when I was younger. But now I live the other side of Hertfordshire, near Welwyn Garden City.
Okay. Number four, what is your favourite genre?
My favourite genre has got to be mystery. I do like to be unravelling a plot in a book and finding out who did something or why it happened. But I also like historical fiction. So I like learning about somebody's life and what happened. It's got to be quite real, true to facts in history. But I like to it still to be a story.
Okay, number five. What was your favourite book as a child?
Oh, my favourite book when I was really young was a book called Fuzzy Peg Goes to School by Alison Uttley. And I carried it with me everywhere. It was all about a little hedgehog who had a satchel when he went to school. And I had a satchel just like his, so I always put it in there. But then when I was older, I liked horse books. Yeah. I had my pony, so I read Horse in the House, Black Beauty, all kinds of books that had horses in them.
Okay. Number six. What are you reading at the moment?
I've just finished The Girl, the Cat and the Navigator, which we're going to start doing in book club, which I really enjoyed. That's by Matilda Woods. And I'm just waiting for October to come through on my Borrow Box app. And that's by Katyn Bayon, and I am looking forward to reading that next.
Number seven, what's your favourite scene in any book?
Oh, now, I've just finished over Christmas, read The Frost Fair by Natasha Harding, which is now coming into the library and everyone's started to read that. The way she describes the frost, it's about a girl who lives in London just after the Great Fire of London, and there was a really hard frost that hit London and the River Thames actually froze over. And the way she describes the magic that happened in her story about that, that was really interesting. I love the way she set that scene.
Number eight, what's the best thing about your job?
The best thing about my job is when the children ask me for book recommendations, and I can just talk about all different genres and find out exactly what they like about a book, as well as what they don't like about a book, so that I can point them in the right direction.
Number nine, what made you change your job to be a library teacher?
I've always loved reading. I've always been that child that had a book in their hand and had my nose buried in a book and being called a bookworm. So when I started at Manor Lodge as a TA, I always went into the library to help the librarian. So when it was Miss Johnston and then Miss Murphy, I was always helping them out. So when Miss Murphy said that she was leaving, I just asked Mrs. Lobo if it was possible that I could try out for the position, which I'm really glad she said yes.
Okay, thank you. See you soon, podcast. Bye.
Fantastic. Thanks to Miss Strachan for taking the hot seat this week, and to you all for listening. Well done to the children for all their contributions, including the music too. We had a piece created on Incredibox by Hugo as our intro this week. And now, to outro the show, here's Obba playing Strollin' on the trombone.